as you are. We are all unworthy to enter the presence.
All right, as you recall, our study is in Genesis. Today we're going to be touching on chapter 44, and we'll do a brief recap in relationship to this. You remember Joseph and his brothers had traveled to Egypt in chapter 42 looking for grain, and Joseph's brothers had traveled to Egypt looking for grain and came to Joseph seeking it. And he recognized them, and he very wittingly called them spies. Remember, he referred to them spies, and he insisted that they were spying, and they declared their innocence. And he insisted before they left that they leave one of their siblings. And they did. They left Judah. Or was it Judah? My memory's short, just like me. It was Judah. Was it Judah? Simeon. I beg your pardon. I knew that wasn't right. Simeon. They left Simeon with Joseph, unknowingly. Didn't know it was Joseph. But so they left Simeon as a ransom, per se. So he stayed there while his brothers went home. And then they exhausted that supply of grain. Has Simeon side on that? Why would he approach it in this way? Cricket. You guys going to leave me hanging, aren't you? Okay. All right. All right, go ahead.
Okay. I think they don't have true repentance going on. But they don't feel that they did that.
Yeah, they don't feel any consequences. They just... That's a worldly sorrow, a why me kind of thing. Yeah, that we're suffering through all this this famine and having to go down here and beg for food. And, you know, they feel sorry for themselves, but they don't feel sorrow for the loss of their brother, is what Doug was speculating. Now, what would you think his servant is thinking about? Have you ever looked at it from that aspect? Can you imagine being Joseph's servant and saying, okay? You know, put their silver back in their bags? Okay. You know, he has no idea that these are Joseph's brothers. But, you know, his master said, put the silver back in. And by the way, put my silver cup in the youngest one's bag. Could you imagine what he's thinking? He's like, okay. You know, have you ever thought about that in that aspect? That's an interesting perspective, but... You know, he obeyed and did as Joseph had instructed him. I just often think about that. I thought, you know, the text doesn't say that the servant was privy to what Joseph was doing, so he was just obeying him. So I can imagine he had ruled over his master's instructions. So just something to think about. All right, let's go ahead on verse 6. It says, when he caught up with them, he repeated these words to them. But they said to him, why does my Lord say such things? Far be it from your servants to do anything like that. We even brought back to you from the land of Canaan the silver we found inside the mouths of our sacks. So why would we steal silver or gold from your master's house? If any of your servants is found to have it, he will die, and the rest of us will become my Lord's slaves. Wow, that's a big price to pay, isn't it? One life and ten other slaves. So the servant said in verse 10, he said, very well then, he said, let it be as you say. Whoever is found to have it will become my slave. The rest of you will be free from blame. Now, wait a minute, that's a slightly lesser charge than what they proposed, isn't it? So... His servant is even more generous than they offered. You know, they offered the death of the one that stole it and slavery for the others. But he says that whoever is found will become my slave and the rest of you will be free from blame. So he showed some mercy there, didn't he?
Think about it. It doesn't really make sense You'd want an honest servant.
That's good. Yeah. You would want an honest servant. Why would you want one that's already
caught stealing? See, that plays back into my earlier question about, you know, I wonder what his servant thought about what was going on. Maybe he's intuitive enough to see into this that there's more to this, because, you know, his master's showing great generosity to these men. He's giving them grain and giving them their money back. You know, their silver is back in their bags. So, you know, the text does not say so, but, you know, you can almost perceive that, you know, he's on to the pattern here. You know, oh, no, we're not going to kill you, but you will become a slave. So he's showing mercy.
If you were interviewing somebody to hire and said, why did you leave your life?
Yeah, that wouldn't go out good, would it? Yeah. Yeah, all of that. Yeah, sure, come on in. Yeah. Stop. All righty. Any other comments?
I think that Joseph has had a lot of time to think about is if he runs into his brothers again. I really think he wants to see if there's any character development that has gone on in these few years that he's been away from them. And he knows where to hit them where it hurts. And that is Benjamin, because he knows if Benjamin's gone, if his father's still alive, then they're going to be in some serious trouble if Benjamin doesn't come back.
Yes. And I think that'll add to
convincing the brothers later that, you know, if they are perceptive enough to see that the favorite or Benjamin was at the feast that he threw, Benjamin was given five times more than anybody else. So obviously his brothers would have noticed that. So now Benjamin's the focus of this again. He's got the cup. He's the one in trouble, right? Of course, they're all in trouble, per se. But Benjamin's the one with the cup. And you're right, Joseph did have a lot of time to think about this. You imagine his brothers left the first time, left Simeon there. You know, he's got Simeon, so obviously he's still in control of the situation. His brothers left and out of need had to come back. For one thing, they needed food. Another thing, their brother was in prison there, you know. So he released Simeon to them, and now this takes place. So it's very interesting and intricate if you look at it from all sides. You know, if you just read the text, it's like, oh, this is an interesting story. But if you think of what's going on, you know, what's Joseph's motivation here? What's his goal? Why is he playing this game, per se, with his brothers? What's the end game? What's he after? You know, it's very interesting. It's almost like a psychological warfare going on here, you know. It's clever, very clever. All right. Well, in verse 11, we begin again. It says, each of them quickly lowered his sack to the ground and opened it. Then the steward proceeded to search, beginning with the oldest and ending with the youngest. And the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. At this, they tore their clothes, and they loaded their donkeys and returned to the city. Of course, I'd already mentioned that. I'll let the cat out of the bag, but that Benjamin had the cup. He's caught. And it says at this discovery, they tore their clothes. Why would they tear their clothes? What is that? You might tell me.
Grief.
Grief. There we go. Okay. That is traditionally the way you react to grief. You tear your clothes, you know. That's what Job did. You remember that? He tore his clothes and sat in sackcloth and ashes. He was grieving. So these men were grieving because they knew, you know, Benjamin. And they knew how his father felt about Benjamin. So, you know, so not only were they probably grieving for their brother, they were grieving for the fact that their father was very close to him, as we'll see later in the text. So it's a very complex situation. And it's obvious, if you look at it, Joseph knew this would happen. This was his plan. He said, I'll get their attention. I know how to make them afraid. I know how to get their attention. It's focus on Benjamin, my brother, because he is closest to their father, and that's the link between them. So, very clever. And I'm sure God was helping him in this, because if you think back on it, God's been with him the whole way. So the wisdom that Joseph displayed is obviously from God, as we see later on. I'm a little jealous, I have to confess. Chapter 45 is one of my favorites in this story, and I don't get to teach it. So so all this will come to fruition in that chapter. It's very interesting. So we'll get into that later. But any other questions or comments so far? Anybody? Okay. All right. Okay, so you can imagine these gentlemen are, they've torn their clothes, they're grieving, they're probably terrified. And they loaded up their stuff and they headed back into the city. They turned around and headed back. Now, Joseph was still in the house, starting in verse 14. So Joseph was still in the house when Judah and his brothers came in, and they threw themselves on the ground before him. And Joseph said to them, "What is this you have done? Don't you know that a man like me can find out things by divination?" You remember his servant mentioned the fact that the cup was used for divination. So why do you think he mentioned this to the brothers? Why did he speak of divination? You know, how do you think you could get away with this? Why would he use that phrase?
Putting out clues.
Yeah.
Did you read my notes when I was in the back?
That was what I was going to say next. Stole my thunder. Yeah, you remember the dreamer? You remember Joseph and his dreams? Remember twice he dreamt that his brothers would bow down to him? They've already done it once. Here they come in. You're right. This is the third time. You're absolutely right. This is the third time they've bowed down to him. On their faces. You know, they threw themselves on the ground. Threw themselves at his feet and at his mercy. So that's interesting, you know. And this would further, you know, the fact that they mentioned divination, it would further add to their fear. So he's got their full attention, obviously. Obviously has their full attention. So now Judah replied, starting in verse 16, he said, "What can we say to my Lord? What can we say?" You know, obviously he's pleading. "How can we prove our innocence? God has uncovered your servant's guilt. We are now my Lord's slaves. We ourselves and the one who was found to have the cup." So, you know, they're feeling guilty. They know what they've done in the past. They know they mistreated their brother Joseph. They don't know this is Joseph, but they know their guilt. And, you know, Joseph has set them up to be guilty by returning their silver and placing the cup in Benjamin's sack. So they're terrified, as they should be. Here's the second in command of all of Egypt, and he's angry with them. So, yeah, I'd be scared too. Any comments? You're a quiet bunch this morning.
Judah is the spokesperson, starting a couple of chapters ago. Mm-hmm. Reuben's out of it. Levi and Simeon, because of what they did, at Shechem.
Yeah.
And so Judah steps up, and his father even listens to Judah. And he relented because Judah intervened.
Yeah, Judah.
And so it's Judah that's expressing the remorse, but it's also Judah who would be the ancestor of Jesus.
Right. Yeah, that's
very significant. But yeah, Judah was the one that pled with his father so Benjamin could come. He said, you know, he said not we could not return without Benjamin. So his father relented and let him. But Judah also made him a promise, you know, that if something happened, he said he could kill his own sons, is what he actually said. So, you know, offering up his own sons as ransom for his little brother. So Judah's being the spokesman again here in this passage. So he said, what can we do? You know, how can we prove our innocence? You know, he proclaims he's innocent, but, you know, he said, what can he do? But in verse 17, Joseph said, "Far be it from me to do such a thing. Only the man who is found to have a cup will become my slave, and the rest of you go back to your father in peace." So Joseph has actually shown him some mercy. Was that Reuben?
It was Reuben.
Okay, I beg your
pardon. Judah offered himself.
Work shift work and work all the time and miss class because of work. I went back and reviewed it. I should have made better notes, huh? Okay. He's not really, but
this is the worst thing he can do to these guys.
Right.
Go back to dad without the.
Yeah, and go back and tell your father I've got the youngest.
Yeah, we did.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, it sounds like it.
Okay, well, you guys can go, you know, but to the knowingly, you know, you think about it, Joseph knows this. This is not going to be an improvement, you know. Keeping Benjamin's going to be really, really rough on him, on their father and on them, trying to explain to their father, as we'll see here later. So, all righty. Any other comments?
Sometimes we forget in the story who we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. This is Israel.
Right.
They got to go back and face the guy who fought an angel.
Yeah.
And probably some of that's still there. Mm-hmm. And they're probably terrified to go home and tell dad, we lost another one.
Right. Especially Benjamin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Joseph was his favorite. Now he thinks
Joseph's dead. Now Benjamin, you know, has fallen into that spot. Now these brothers have to go home and tell their father that Benjamin is lost. He's a slave in Egypt. You know, so. But now here's an interesting thing. As we read on in verse 18, it says, "Then Judah went up to him and said, 'Pardon your servant, my lord. Let me speak a word to you, my lord.'" Now, what's significant about that? If you think about it, he said he went up to him. He actually approached Joseph. Now, is that a kosher thing? You know, he was so desperate, he actually approached him and asked him to speak to him one-on-one, you know. And approaching, you know, could you have done that with Pharaoh? Obviously not, you know. That wasn't done. You just didn't approach him. He talked to you, and that was the way, you know, you spoke when you were spoken to, and you moved when you were told to move. But he was brave enough to approach Joseph. And he's, you know, begs him. He says, "Pardon your servant, my lord. Let me speak a word to you." You know, he's begging, in essence. He's very fearful. So he says, "Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself." In verse 19, it says, "My lord asked his servants, 'Do you have a father or a brother?' And we answered, 'We have an aged father, and there is a young son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead, and he is the only one of his mother's sons left, and his father loves him.'" So, you know, he's reminding Joseph, you know, you already said this, you know, we've told you this. Terry, did you have something?
We talked here about approaching Joseph. If we think the book of Esther, that when you approach the king, remember when she had to go to him to try to save her people, if he didn't reach the specter out to you could be killed.
Yes, yes. He mentioned in the book of Esther, you know, she approached the king, the tradition or the rule was if he didn't, you know, point a scepter at you, that you couldn't be approached. If you couldn't approach, you could even be killed for you stepping up. So, you know, it's a big deal to approach a leader like that.
You know, you can't just walk up and say, "Hey, I need to talk to you. Yeah, I got a problem here." It just doesn't work that way. So Judah reminds him of, you know, the fact that, you know, they'd explained that, you know, that his father loved him. And then he goes on in verse 21, he says, "Then you said to your servants, 'Bring him down to me so I can see him for myself.' And we said to my lord, 'The boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, his father will die.'" So he's reiterating this. He's reminding him, you know, this is going to be grievous, you know. He said, "But you told your servants, 'Unless your younger brother comes with you, you will not see my face again.' When we went back to your servant, my father, we told him what my lord had said. Then our father said, 'Go back and buy a little more food.' But we said, 'We cannot go down. Only if our youngest brother is with us will we go.' We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. So they reminded their own father, you know, he said, we can't come back without him. We can't buy food without him. So they pleaded with their father, in light of starving to death, to let him take Benjamin with him. Now Benjamin's in all this trouble. So he's reminding Joseph of the scenario, the situation that they're in, you know. But you insisted we bring our brother back, and now, you know, we can't go back without him, you know. So they're very upset. And I think it's interesting to remind yourself, as you think about this, Joseph knew this would happen because he knew his father. He knew his brothers. He knew how his father felt about himself and his younger brother, Benjamin. So he knew he was just twisting a little more. He was cranking it up. He was getting them. He had their attention even more. So Joseph is trying to convince them, as you see, that, you know, he's in control. And he's got them where he wants them. So, all righty. Any questions, comments?
I wonder where Joseph's, what he was thinking as Judah's saying this about his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Wondering how dad was taking his loss. And maybe what the brothers had told their dad.
Mm-hmm.
Did they see them tearing up his coat, putting in the goat's blood, and, you know, as he's being hauled off into slavery? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how much that he witnessed. You know, of course, they threw him into a pit initially. Joseph's probably curious about his dad. You know, he can't ask
directly, so he's trying to, you know, in some way or another, he's trying to ascertain information. You know, he asked directly, how is your father? You know, he referred to him as, you know, when he greets them. And so I can imagine he's grieving being away from his father because they were close. You know, he was his father's favorite. So it's an interesting scenario. You know, it's like I said, in chapter 45, when Joseph reveals himself as one of the most dramatic things in this story. And it's very interesting, very interesting. Any more comments? All righty. All right, and in verse 27, let's pick it up there. It says, your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me and said, he has surely been torn to pieces, and I have not seen him since. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, he will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. And obviously Joseph already knew that, you know. And that's coming straight from Jacob. He's, you know, it would break his heart. It would absolutely break his heart to lose the second son from his wife, Rachel. All right, in verse 30 it says, so now, if the boy is not with us, when I go back to your servant, my father, and if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. It will just kill him, is what they're saying. It will just kill him. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to the grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety to my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will bear the blame before you, my father, before you, and my father all my life. So he's obviously pleading with Joseph. Terry?
I can't help but think the situation with David and his son Absalom.
Mm-hmm.
Absalom, of course, had totally rebelled against the kingdom, would have killed David and his own father. Mm-hmm. But yet we see even at the end, after we see that Joab has killed Absalom, that David's saying, oh, Absalom, Absalom, my son, I would die rather than for you. Mm-hmm. So we see a father's love, so we can sort of have some empathy for here for, you know, the father of Joab.
Yeah.
That's very true. I mean, being a father myself and having a son of my own, I can relate to this. You know, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my children, either one of them, my son or my daughter. So, you know, a father's love for his children is very strong, and especially a special bond like this one. It was very, very strong. And the brothers recognized it, and even though they were jealous of him, they realized that they loved their own father, and they were jealous of their brother Joseph, and that's how this all got started. You know, they hated him, absolutely hated him, especially after he recalled his dreams to them, you know, and spoke of the fact that, you know, he dreamt that, you know, about them bowing to him. And Joseph would realize all this as he's dealing with these brothers. So this is a very intricate situation. I mean, these, you know, the history that goes with it, and the fact that Joseph knows who these men are and they don't know who he is, he's pretty well in control. And he knows the situation, knows how the people feel about each other. So he's making sure that what he does is convincing to these men. So, any other comments or insight?
Well, I wonder if Joseph's father was angry when he found that his brother's sons had lied to him about Joseph's death.
I'm sure he will be. Yeah. And that's in the next chapter when he finds out about it. Yeah. He's probably relieved and angry.
I would imagine. So. Alrighty. Alright, let's go ahead and wrap it up here. It says, in verse 33, it says, "Now then, please let your servant remain here as the Lord's slave in place of the boy, and let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy is not with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come on my father." So he's saying, he couldn't bear that. He was willing to take Benjamin's place.
This is the climax of the entire story, but really of Genesis. Mm-hmm. Right here, these two verses, 33 and 34.
Yeah.
Because if we think of Genesis as being the foundational book for everything that we understand in the New Testament, the sacrifice that Jesus will make as a substitute for us on the cross, mm-hmm. offering himself in place, there's a difference between Judah saying to his dad, "I will bear the blame all my life," and saying to Joseph, "Take me instead of Benjamin."
Yeah.
Suddenly we've gone from worldly sorrow to godly sorrow.
Absolutely. You read my notes on the back too.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah. That's what I was
going to compare this relationship between Jacob and Benjamin with God the Father and Christ. You think about that, you know, the love that they had for each other. You know, if you compare the two, you know, God loved us enough to give up his son. Jacob didn't want to give up his son. He wanted his sons. He loved them and cherished them. God did too. If you think about that. God loved his son greater than any of us could possibly. And yet he was willing to give him up. So there's a divine difference between men and God. You know, like I said, I can relate to that having a son of my own. The thought of that makes me cringe, you know, to sacrifice my son for the benefit of someone else. Yeah, that's a tough call. But God did it, and he sacrificed his son, and his son was willing to do it on our behalf. That's the one big takeaway I want everybody to take with this lesson today. You know, Judah had the right attitude, you know, take me instead. Take me, you know. Let my little brother go. And that's what Christ told his father. Take me. He told the man in control, take me and let my brothers go and sisters. So that's the attitude that we need to have as Christians. A sort of self-sacrificing, selfless abandon, that as we go through life, you know, it's not about us. It's about you know, the love that God showed for us, we need to share that with others so they'll be rescued from a lost and dying world. You know, people need that kind of attitude, that kind of an example in their lives. You think about the bond between father and son, and the pain and the separation. Think of the pain that God suffered at the separation of his son from him. Think of the grief that would follow that separation. Well, everyone in this room is grieved at one point in time. You know what that's very real to all of us. And we can understand that. And God would grieve at the separation from his son. And in like manner, we shouldn't want to grieve our father. These sons of Jacob were terrified at the fact that what was going to take place was going to grieve their father. You know, their brother being a captive in Egypt was not something they wanted to go back and tell their dad. They didn't want to see the reaction of their father as he grieved for his youngest. And we should not want to grieve our father either. You know, our sins and our actions can grieve the Holy Spirit, as the Bible tells us. It also grieves our father, and we should strive not to grieve our father as well. And one thing I'd encourage us to do with that thought in mind, you know, we see others that, brothers, sisters, even those that aren't a member of the body of the church, they're grieving the Father. You know, they're living lives that are contrary to the will of God. And it's our task, it's our role to speak to them, to tell them what they're doing. Now, some may realize it, and they're just being stubborn and living contrary to what they know. Others might be ignorant to the fact. So we can discern from the two and help others learn not to grieve the Father. So that's a short lesson this morning. Any questions or comments? There's a lot of
text there.
I'm thinking of a couple of different things here.
Okay.
First of all, the cup would be most precious to Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has connected that cup to Benjamin, that which was most precious to his father, now that he was gone.
Okay.
The brothers had taken that which was most precious to the father, Joseph, and sold him into slavery. And so now he is setting up a situation that is very similar and trying to get them to come up with this godly sorrow, and they're just standing there. You know, Reuben, Simeon, Levi, you know, the rest of them, they just don't do anything. But it's Judah who comes forth. Judah, who has expressed at least some sort of repentance to their dad in saying, I will carry the blame. And yet he's not all in until this moment.
Right.
Where he's willing to give himself and Benjamin's place. And of course, Jesus being in the body of Judah. Romans 5, 6 through 8 talks about while we were enemies, Christ died for us. And here, Judah is offering himself not only in place of Benjamin, but all of his brothers, so that they can all return with food and sustain their families, provide for them back in Egypt, or in Israel. Come Israel.
Right.
Canaan this time. Yeah. So there's layers to the onion here.
Oh yeah, many layers. The more you read it and review it,
the more there is to see. Yeah. Yeah, he is, you know, he's gone from begging to and pleading to offering, you know, a solution. And the solution is all on him, you know. So it all falls on Judah. And it's interesting how this transpires as we go into chapter 45. the emotions that are in play, the
what if he had not offered himself,
right?
What would Joseph have done?
That's true. There's a lot of what ifs. Yeah.
Very interesting how it plays out. And I hope you. I don't know who teaches next week. Is that you? Yeah, you did that on purpose. You could, did the fun one. But there is a lot right here. This is all leading up. And I struggle not to talk about chapter 45. So I don't want to let too much go. I don't want to steal too much from you. But it's very interesting. I encourage you to read chapter 45. And as the story continues, you see how Joseph handles this. And see how this all transpires. So if there are no more questions or comments, that's all I had for you this morning. I appreciate your kind attention and your patience with me. All right. Thank you.
Lay your burden down, every care you carry, and come to the table.